Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Thank you for joining me on this Saturday evening, where many likely have many other things they could be doing, but I have lots of important stuff to talk about today, and I'll likely be taking tomorrow off, so I want to begin with something that's been on my mind. As I personally struggle through my own internal dilemmas with loss and adaptation to change, I'm reminded of just how easy it can be to allow oneself to choose the path of least resistance, to acquiesce to the louder voice, the more forceful presence, telling you that even the slightest deviation in thought makes you the outsider, the one worthy of shame, blind hatred, and segregation. It is indeed easier to allow those who speak in absolutes and refuse to consider alternate perspectives to control the conversation, to insert themselves as the dominant opinion, even though that may not be the case at all. We're all confronted with our own struggles every day, many that are of our own creation, as I know better than anyone, and more than any of us would like to admit, many that are the intentional creation of those who position themselves as our leaders, while failing to remember what that word truly means, or rather, no longer caring. With all of this bearing down on us every day, many make the conscious choice to blind themselves to not just what's happening today, but what we already know about our very own past, and choose instead to allow the loudest and often the most uninformed voice in the room to take control. And this is the point. But we must begin to stand in the path of such ignorance and demonstrate the glaringly obvious contrast to an objective, yet skeptical, open-minded opinion. And most importantly, we must remember why it is that we seek and spread the truth and fight for what we believe to be right. At least for me, it's for these very souls we speak of, lost to the deception, willfully or otherwise, that I wake up every day in pursuit of the truth that they hide from all of us, in hopes that I can pull just one more from that illusion. So with all that in mind, let's get into some of the articles and topics from today. And the first one to really tie that first thought off, the idea of what they hide from us and the illusion that we're all put into, in discussion of the Kavanaugh deception, which I've discussed a few times, but in fact, one thing, and which is probably one of many that happened while we were all distracted with what they wanted us to be looking at. This actually coming from Fortune, entitled "Under the Fog of Kavanaugh, House Passes $3.8 trillion More in Tax Cuts." Now that's, understand, for the wealthy, if you really read into this. And of course, this is something that is likely not going to pass the Senate anyway. But the reality is, the reason this was put forward during all of this is because they knew we weren't paying attention. Thank you for the super chat, Sammy. So, of course, with attention fixed on Brett Kavanaugh and the confirmation hearings, which, by the way, many have likely already saw, he is going to be the next Supreme Court justice, which is something that I said in the very beginning. Which we knew this was going to happen. This was what most wanted to happen, even on the Democratic side, which many people may argue, but they just simply wanted this chaos to pull our attention away from the real reasons he shouldn't be in that position. That has nothing to do with allegations of sexual assault. It has to do with the fact that he is inherently unconstitutional as a judge, that's entire position is to support the Constitution, being an integral part of the creation of the Patriot Act. Basically voting in every roundly that the government has rights over your constitutional rights, where they assert the idea of national security. This is the judge that we now have on the Supreme Court. But of course, while everyone was fixed on the allegations of sexual assault, the U.S. House of Representatives passed a new $3.1 trillion tax cut on Friday. The vote was 220 to 191, including three Democrats. The House's new bill takes effect starting 2025 and would add $600 billion to the national debt within the next decade, and then $3.2 trillion to that debt over the 10 years after that. As I said, understand this still has to pass the Senate, and it's very likely that it won't happen at all. But the point being that this, in addition to the previous tax cuts, which is roundly acknowledged that it's largely tax cuts from the wealthy, which is the opposite of what he claimed, this stands to do the exact same thing. The point being to begin with this is what happens when we're paying attention to what they want us to see, when we're focusing on what the mainstream media is pumping into your consciousness, that being not the truth, that being the least important of what's really going on in the world. And this is just one of many things that happens every time we have these distractions. They carry out things while we're not paying attention. Likely find many more of these popping up over the next few days. And in regard to everything else, we also are likely not paying attention to while focusing on such distractions. The next story coming from Sputnik News and reported from many other places. I usually just like to report the first place that I see it to give them credit. This one entitled U.S. to supply more F-35s to Israel to offset S-300 systems in Syria. Of course. Of course, because why would we want a de-escalation? Let's give them things that could potentially keep it going. That's what it all comes back to. And again, giving Israel even more money, supplies, tax dollars, while we need it here in the United States. But of course, Israel needs it. You got to be there for them, right? As the aggressive, human rights violating war criminal ally that they are. So on Tuesday, Russia's defense minister, Sergei Sugai, still haven't looked that up. I'm not sure exactly how you pronounce his last name, said that Moscow has delivered the S-300s, as we reported then, the missile systems, as well as many other things, and has now integrated their defenses with Syrian people on the ground. And they're training Syrian personnel to operate this machinery. And of course, in response, an additional shipment of U.S. S-35 stealth planes will now be supplied to Israel under President Trump's order, of course, in apparent retaliation to Syria's recent acquisition of these S-300 systems. These systems meant to defend from aggressive Israeli actions. But no, we need more offensive measures because how dare they try to defend themselves? Washington also notified Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, of course, that the first U.S. S-35 squadron would soon be deployed at Al Dhafra Air Base, 32 kilometers south of the UAE's capital, Abu Dhabi. Really just showing you that the U.S. is happy to continue funding the worst human rights violators in the world while pointing the finger at anyone they deem their enemy. F-35 stealth fighters, of course, as they claim, would be able to avoid the S-300 missile systems and the strikes that they would fire and can possibly destroy them right on the ground. Now, I'm not an expert on these types of planes. I don't know if that is the case, but this is the claim being made, and it seems to make sense why they would be giving them to Israel to maintain their illegal strikes on a sovereign nation. Again, just giving you some light on who the real bad guys are in this situation, regardless of what the past record of Assad or Syria or Russia or anybody is. What's happening in front of us is the continuation of a war that has taken the lives of innocent civilians, likely intentionally to a large degree, just like we're seeing in many other locations, some of which we'll talk a little bit more about today. And the next story coming from Mint Press News, a very interesting story that I feel is very relevant and gives us some insight on the fact that no government in my eyes is really in any, there's no good and bad in this scenario. They're just people who happen to be on the wrong side of, as we see it, what's right and wrong, the morals of a situation. But these governments, as I see it, be it Russian, Syrian, anybody, are all ultimately in this for one of a few reasons, primarily which is money. And this one comes down to that specifically. A very interesting story written by Whitney Webb and always does an excellent job. By the way, I have an interview coming up with Whitney Webb this coming Tuesday, so tune in for that. This one entitled, What's Really Going On Behind the Secret Saudi-Russia Oil Deal? Yes, you read that correctly. Secret Saudi-Russia Oil Deal. Very interesting development here. So Reuters reported details of a private and secret deal, which is no longer secret now, reached between Russia and Saudi Arabia, a deal that was aimed at increasing oil output in order to offset the coming shock to oil prices that will follow U.S. efforts to starve Iran of its oil revenues. The deal was struck with cooperation from the United States, of all people. Yes, that's right. United States involved with a deal with Russia, with Saudi Arabia, to stave off the problems that are caused from the unilateral U.S. actions against Iran. Very interesting development. Now, one of the sources that spoke to Reuters asserted that, quote, the Russians and the Saudis agreed to add barrels to the market quietly, with a view not to look like they're acting on Trump's order to pump more, as we just reported, because they denied that, as Trump demanded they pump more barrels of oil and spoke in front of his meeting, blanking on the word, his rally that basically we're going to have to force them to do it or we're going to stop protecting them, showing them the real intentions behind what U.S. policy is all about. These you know, vassal states that they all are with the protection of the U.S. military has nothing to do with what's right and wrong, as they always frame it. But now seemingly going forward with this to make it seem like, oh, we're not really doing what Trump said, but we're doing it anyway. So by helping the U.S. to avert a supply shock, as many are talking about, which is all but inevitable, of course, due to the U.S. sanctions on Iran and the removal of their oil from the markets, which is important, Russia may actually enable the U.S.-led sanctions campaign to be successful and longer lasting than it would be without Moscow's support in all of this. So there's a lot of different moving parts to this. And you may be immediately asking why, especially with Russia being involved, thank you for the super chat, the Streamlabs support, why would Russia be taking part in this? Especially since there's a clear connection with Iran and Russia, and they're backing in all of this to stand against these sanctions. Well, of course, the article goes into a couple of possible motives. Now, Russia's oil sector, of course, stands to benefit economically and increasing its oil exports and thus increasing its sales. Money. You can't ever underestimate the willingness of these governments to want to make a profit. Of course, another possibility is just increasing its position in the global trade in general, which this would do. But most likely, as it points out, it's due to concern about how increased oil prices, particularly oil prices crossing the $100 per barrel threshold, which is important, that may affect the global economy. And this is what they're concerned about. So I guess some well-regarded analysts, as far as that goes today, as knowing how often they are wrong, I've warned roundly that if oil prices reach $100 a barrel, which they're about 85 right now, I understand it, could actually lead to a global economic collapse. And of course, a collapse of the equity market. That's a pretty alarming thing to say. So it seems possible, as after all my claims of their profiteering, which seems like a likely point to me, that they're simply just trying to stave off an economic collapse, which would make sense. But it's a lot going on. It's hard to tell. Iran has, of course, lashed out about this whole thing. They're not happy that Russia is basically allowing the U.S. to continue with all of this. And as the author finishes in a very interesting way, regardless of Russia's reasoning for privately cooperating with the Saudis and the U.S., during all the Russiagate stuff, which is interesting, to make the effort to starve Iran of its oil exports feasible, it is highly unlikely that either Russia or the Saudis will be able to prevent the coming supply shock after November 4th. With China's recent backtracking on promises to Iran, a supply shock is all but guaranteed, and with it, $100 oil. That's an alarming prospect, with them saying that kind of a shock could bring an economic collapse, a global economic collapse. Very interesting development. So we'll have to keep track of how this goes forward. But as I said, the real point here is that without Moscow's help and even China's backtracking on their deals with Iran, the sanctions would have likely failed, and they still might. So it's very interesting to see this go forward. And maybe it is true that they're really staving off some kind of a massive event, but it seems like it's going against everything they've been going for. So interesting to see. So make sure to give you a unbiased view of all these points to see that even somebody that we see on the right side of this back and forth is now seemingly going along with U.S. and Saudi actions. Very unnerving, to say the least. Moving on to the next story coming from mintpressnews.com. This one entitled, I got a couple great ones from Mint Press News today. This one entitled, UN Panel, Saudi Arabia and UAE Interfering in Documentation of Yemen War Crimes. Important that we keep up on this story in general, so you guys know what's actually going on in Yemen, as many, many things continue to rise up and steal our attention away from so many important things. Oh, excuse me. That's my video playing in the background. There are so many important things going on today, and it's important that we don't lose track of these things due to stuff like the Kavanaugh hearings. And many other things they will continue to try to force into your consciousness so you stop paying attention. Yes, the bus bombing of Yemen was a while ago, but that was just one of many things that have been happening since the beginning of this war. What's happening in Yemen is only intensifying. And it's important that we continue to force them to address it, as we have been doing. And this, of course, is one step further in that. As much as I don't think the UN is the right side in any of this, it's important for us to understand that them simply calling it out is definitely a positive thing. So the panel of investigators recently presented a list of human rights abuses to the United Nations, many of which we've relentlessly listed out on this very show. The report was highly critical, as we would have expected, of the U.S.-backed Saudi coalition, and claimed that the coalition's use of indiscriminate airstrikes was to blame, of course, for the majority of civilian casualties since the invasion — they call it a war, it's clearly an illegal invasion — began in 2015. Over the course of the invasion, the coalition has bombed weddings, funerals, water tanks, health clinics, civilian buses, and schools. An estimated 10,000 civilians, from their numbers, have been killed in this fighting, though the actual figure is likely much, much higher, given that this figure they claim has not been updated for over 2 years. And as we just reported, apparently over 600,000 civilians have been killed or injured in Yemen since the Saudi-led coalition began its attacks in 2015, according to Yemen's Ministry of Human Rights based in Sana'a. And it mentioned the land, air, and sea blockade in Yemen in this report, which is important because, as we know, it has created the world's largest cholera epidemic and is, of course, creating a massive famine that is on the verge of killing 18 million or more, as the UN's own documentation claims. And many of you know this. This has been ongoing. But the important point is, since this report was released in August, the coalition, the U.S.-backed Saudi coalition, has been directly interfering with the panel's activities in regard to documenting these alleged war crimes. I wouldn't even say alleged war crimes. Clearly documented in this country. Thank you for the super chat, Rachel. Appreciate your support. The reality here is that they are on the ground stopping them from finding the information that they said that they are trying to prove they did these. Of course, the point being that they committed war crimes. They have no reason to interfere with this if they weren't trying to hide something. I mean, the compilation of acts and lies and deception about what they're doing is glaringly obvious if you simply know where to look. And that's not the mainstream media. I think that's pretty obvious. But in a related story, this one also coming from Mint Press News, this one entitled, "Amid Famine and Economic Collapse, Major Protests Against Saudi-Led Coalition in Yemen." Now, massive protests. Ask yourself why you're not seeing this on the media, right? You get a few hundred people gathered in a square in Iran, and it's the biggest story of the year about how the people are oppressed and we need to invade Iran to save the people. Here we've got hundreds of thousands of people marching through the streets of Yemen, protesting the fact that they're dying, starving to death due to their actions. Oh, but that's because of the Saudi-led coalition, the U.S.-backed Saudi-led coalition being involved. That's why you don't see it. I guess that should make sense in a weirdly disgusting way. Now, hundreds of thousands, that's important, of Yemen's people have taken to the streets of the big cities on Friday to demonstrate against the U.S.-backed Saudi-led coalition in the wake of the spread of famine throughout the country. As I talked about in my interview with Hussein al-Bukhari, and we've done a report on the show as well, they're literally eating leaf paste to not starve to death, as millions of children are on the brink of death this moment. One child dies every 10 minutes, as it were, in this location because of these actions. You're not hearing this in the media. But these people are taken to the streets so people like me and people who actually care about human life will report on this and say, look at these struggling people, not Houthi rebels marching through the streets, not Hamas marching through the streets, not militants marching through the streets. These are civilians, average Yemeni people, the millions of them that are on the brink of starvation, saying, please pay attention to what the U.S., Saudi Arabia, and the UAE are doing to our country. They, of course, accused the coalition of causing this famine, which is easily verifiable. They wave the Yemeni national flags and they chant slogans condemning the blockade and the economic war against the country. The economic war being very important. It's exactly like we see carried out historically from the U.S. empire. Economic war waged with sanctions and blockades and things that starve the people mentally and physically. Intentionally, so that they have the kind of reaction they want to see. They don't care how many people die. Now, the Houthis confirmed that their movement is ready to make peace, as they've said many times, but only on honorable terms, saying, quote, "We are for an honorable peace and the Yemeni people will stand behind whoever wants to stop the aggression." Now, the Houthis welcomed the European Union's stance against the war in Yemen. On Thursday, the European Parliament actually passed a resolution through which it has called all sides to end the war. That's great. Regardless of their intentions, I think that's fantastic. The resolution also called for an urgent ban on the sale of weapons to the U.S.-backed Saudi coalition. Very interesting. Directly standing in opposition of Israel, Saudi Arabia, and the United States. This triad of evil today, very clearly standing against them. And that's a very important thing. Now, they, of course, the important thing to realize, too, is we've talked about the Houthi rebels in the past, that they have actively tried to bring an end to this. They wanted to speak about, they want to welcome the investigations. They want to welcome the United Nations. They want to welcome everything. They've even tried to come to the United Nations to speak, and the Saudi Arabians would not allow it. They shut down the airport. They threatened them from leaving. They don't want the truth getting out. And they're going to go to great lengths to do so. On a very side note, which I don't even have the story scheduled today, just on the top of my head, where the Saudi journalist that was just murdered in the Saudi embassy in Turkey. That's a big story, and I'll probably report on it soon. But the point is these Saudis are willing to kill people just to get so the truth does not slip out. I'll be sure to include that link in the show notes of the Saudi journalist who was murdered in a Turkey embassy, or rather a Saudi embassy in Turkey, as he's been speaking truth to power about Saudi Arabia for a long time now. He walked in, left his wife outside, and never came back out. And she's been raising hell ever since, trying to point out that he was murdered. And that's what we're finding out now. It's a horrifying reality. Of course, they blamed the U.S.-backed Saudi coalition for the Houthis, by the way, blamed the U.S.-backed Saudi coalition for a stalemate in peace talks and a political resolution to the war in Yemen, saying, quote, "The enemies blocked all efforts to restore peace while the Sana'a negotiators offered concessions." As I just said, they are doing everything they can to stop this from happening because they don't want peace. War is what they're after, and it should be very clear to us by now. The coalition has used systematic economic strangulation as a weapon of war, targeting specifically jobs, infrastructure, and agricultural sector and pumping stations, factories, and the provisions of basic services, as well as imposing a land, sea, and air embargo impacting the country's imports, causing the spread of famine throughout the country. These are not the actions you take against rebels. These are actions you take against the people. And that is a very important distinction. And as we're sitting here talking about the reality of how the U.S.-backed Saudi coalition in no way, shape, or form wants peace of any kind, we need to keep that in relation in our minds to what everything else we talk about in regard to U.S. actions around the world. And in the next story, a very important one in regard to the very same topic of how they simply do not want peace because it doesn't suit their interests, regardless of how many people it may kill. This one coming from Anti-War, entitled UN General. No war with North Korea is a slippery slope for the United States. That's really what we're talking about here. It's dangerous. We should be very wary of peace. Peace is a dangerous thing. This is the definition of Orwellian. War is peace, ladies and gentlemen. And this is what they want you to believe. So Lieutenant General Erie, I believe is how you pronounce his name, E-Y-R-E, said he doesn't understand why North Korea is, quote, pushing so hard for the end of war declaration. He accused North Korea of plotting to try to split those who are allied in that 68-year-long war. This is unbelievable. And it shows you the amount of propagandized people out there that they can even say these kind of things. He went on to claim that a state of peace would itself be, quote, a slippery slope on the Korean Peninsula, on the grounds that if there's not a war, people might ask what the UN command is even doing there. Or further still, whether the U.S. needs a massive military presence in South Korea, which is the kicker. That's the point. They need that location, be it the UN or the United States. And to say that peace is somehow contrary to their interest and so is a problem is wildly revealing about everything we talk about. They do not want peace there, not because they're worried that it's a big trick and they don't want peace because it's counter to their political interests. Really let that set in. Of course, as the author notes, permanent states of war are a valuable form of job security for career generals. Of course, but the UN command overseeing the 1953 armistice was never meant to be an eternal military force in Korea. Rather, it was expected to last until the peace treaty could be finalized, which wasn't supposed to take 68 years. Now that it has, top members of the command are worried that they'll do what they'll do without such a justification. Really think about the profound implications of saying that peace is not feasible for us, that peace does not work for what we're trying to accomplish, that peace may mean I might lose my job. God forbid we should save human lives. Really take that into account as we're seeing them demine the demilitarized zone between North and South Korea, make leaps and bounds in actually stopping these aggressions. But no, no, no. This man might lose his job and the U.S. might lose its stronghold against China. So God forbid. And really think of that in regard to everything else we talk about today. Moving on to the last story of the day to try to end with something positive. I put this up today in The Last American Vagabond. This article truly caught my eye for many different reasons. Now, I'll let you read into this what you will. There's many ways you can take this of what he was trying to accomplish or what this man truly is in general. But I found this to be very inspiring for many different reasons. This article entitled, Effing Historical, Watch Banksy Painting Self-Destruct at Sotheby's Auction. Now, this story is entertaining, to say the least, because of how he, I'll just read into this, that there's so much going on here that speaks volumes. And if you know anything about Banksy as the political activist that he truly is, this is the kind of thing that really inspires people to not just think outside the box, not no pun intended, but to just kind of snub the establishment, to speak truth to power. So this Banksy painting, quote, self-destructed, as they're claiming it, as they're calling it, which it kind of did, on Friday evening on the auction podium at Sotheby's New Bond Street location in London after being sold for £1.04 million. Think about that. That's a lot of money. And the spray-painted canvas called Girl with Balloon was subject to furious bidding at the Contemporary Art Evening Sale with a winning bid by telephone, fetching more than three times its pre-sale estimate and a record price for the, as they call, mysterious artist. A record-selling price for Banksy, which most artists would call a career-making move. Of course, shortly after the auction was concluded, interestingly, an alarm from within the painting sounded, with most of the artwork emerging from the bottom in strips. Hidden within the base of the frame was a shredder. How interesting is that? So instead of thinking of his career, Banksy allows this painting to be sold and secretly puts a shredder into the frame. And once it sells for a record amount of money, over $1 million, instead of doing what most artists would do, he activates the shredder, which begins to shred the painting. As they say, quote, we've just been Banksy'd, according to Alex Branzik from Sotheby's European Head of Contemporary Art. He said at this press conference after the auction, he said, quote, we have not experienced this situation in the past, where a painting spontaneously shredded upon achieving a near record for the artist. We are busily figuring out what this means in an auction context. Now, somebody just paid $1 million for it. So is this still part of the art? Did he just shred the painting the person is trying to buy? I mean, clearly you could argue that it's still an art installation. I argue that's why the painting didn't get shredded fully. It stops halfway. Because if it were to shred and fall out, it kind of ceases to be a piece of art. So maybe there's part of it where he still, I mean, now it remains as a statement in my eyes. So Banksy, if you guys should look up his work, he remains one of the most mysterious artists of this era. And he began his career spray painting buildings in England and has become a global figure, kind of speaking truth to power with his art. Some of his work include two policemen kissing, armed riot police with yellow smiley faces, and a chimpanzee with a sign displaying the words, laugh now, but one day I'll be in charge. A post on Banksy's official Instagram page showed the moment when the auction house officials and bidders were stunned with the artwork self-destructed. And he has titled this piece, Going, Going, Gone, which I truly love, which I made the art of the day on The Last American Vagabond. Of course, social media immediately responded and was freaking out. One person claiming, you have consistently shown the courage to thumb your nose at the commercialism of art. Bravo, which I wholeheartedly agree with. Another user asked, was it supposed to stop halfway or did it jam? Which is an interesting question. And somebody said, of course, effing historical. Now, Banksy has made his feelings known about the commercial art world in a recent masterpiece titled, I Can't Believe You Morons Actually Buy This Shit. Something we should all truly be celebrating. The fact that this kind of thing actually happened, that someone is willing to thumb his nose at the commercialism of art and disregard a $1 million sale for the chance to make a point. To make a point of what's really important. And many of you may think different of Banksy, and that's fine, we can have our own opinions, but the idea of doing something like this does make a point. And it's important that we all find ways to do that in our daily lives, to make that point. As I said in the beginning, to stand in the path of such overzealous ignorance today, the willingness to ignore everything we talk about on a daily basis and pretend that everything will be fine. We all hope it will be, but the truth is much more stark and we need to begin paying attention. So find your ways to make statements like this, to stand in the path of such ignorance, to speak your truth to power as often as you possibly can, because that's what we're here to do. Thank you for tuning in today. I appreciate you joining me. I'll be back on Monday for another edition of the Daily Wrap-Up and a T-Lab Research and Review. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.